Tonight, our guest is an international award-winning writer and broadcast producer, Lynn Hunt. Lynn is the author of the blog and the book, The Dirt Diaries. She is a consulting rosarian and accredited horticultural judge for the American Rose Society. Lynn is also a member of the permanent panel of the Biltmore International Rose Trials. On top of that, Lynn also writes for a variety of national magazines and newspapers on topics of interest to gardeners. Now tonight, Lynn is going to share with us some inside information from her recent visit as a member of the press to the Queen's Garden at Buckingham Palace. This garden has been called one of the most remarkable gardens in the world. And you know there are roses there. So sit back and relax. It's time for another episode of Voices from the Garden.
It's time for Voices from the Garden, a series that celebrates and explores an intrinsic mix of life lessons, faith stories, and glorious gardening adventures, told by those who experience them in their own words, exclusively on the Rose Chat podcast.
Try Haven brand soil conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey, Lynn, welcome to Rose Chat.
Thank you, Teresa. Nice to be back with you again.
Now, Lynn, you visited Buckingham Palace not long ago and were invited to take a tour of the house and the Queen's Garden. Now, just how did you manage that invitation?
Well, Teresa, I was given an assignment from the Christian Science Monitor. I had been working on some articles on pollinators, and they found out I was going across to England, and they were interested in what England was doing to help promote pollinators. And I discovered that the Queen had installed 4 beehives in part of her garden out on a little island that's on a 3-acre lake that is in her garden. And I wanted to find out more and do a little reporting about it. So I was invited to go on a walking tour to do some of my research. And it was absolutely fascinating.
I'm thinking if the lake is 3 acres and it has a man-made island, so how large is this garden?
The garden is actually 39 acres. It's a walled garden in the middle of London. And anybody who's been there to see the changing of the guard probably didn't realize that there was this huge garden behind the actual palace. That was part of the excitement, was finding out that she had decided to do her beehives out on the island. And she's got 200,000 bees, and they feast on 350 varieties of wildflowers. And last year, these busy bees produced 420 jars of honey. The queen, they say that the queen enjoys a little bit of the honey every morning on her breakfast tray, and she's also given a few jars to the Pope. So he's had some of that great honey from her beehives.
Now, and if I was a bee, I'd want to be there, wouldn't you, Chris?
Oh, absolutely. You know, 39 acres, I didn't realize there was that much garden area in central London. That's amazing.
Back in Henry VIII's day, it was much, much larger areas. This garden that he used as his own private hunting grounds. So it's amazing because there are so many gardens in London that you would be surprised when you go to visit if you haven't been there. In this particular garden, which is the Queen's Garden at Buckingham Palace, has 3 major areas. The Rose Garden back Hyde Park, which was originally one of the areas that Henry VIII had years and years ago. And then there's Harrison's Lawn and what they call the Yard, which is actually the wilderness area. And in the garden itself, when you walk around, there are 3 miles of graveled paths that wind through the gardens. And this design was done by Capability Brown back in the 1700s. And the first garden party was held there in 1763 to celebrate King George III's birthday.
Now, you mentioned the wilderness area. Did you get to go through the wilderness area? I'm curious what that looks like or what you found there.
Well, you cannot stray off the gravel path, unfortunately, and you're not allowed to take any pictures. But I did a lot of research on it, Teresa, just to find out what the heck was going on, and did find out that in the whole garden, there's 6,500 plants, And as I mentioned, 350 species of wildflowers. They have 420 trees and 35 different types of mulberries. One of their mulberry trees is one of the oldest in all of England. And 80 varieties of birds have been seen there. And I could see lots of birds when I was there. And there are bats and foxes and hedgehogs. And they say 20 tawny owls. In that little microcosm of garden, there's a heck of a lot going on. You just have to go along and take a lot of notes and then go back and ask questions later. Because, of course, when you're going along, you see things and you want to know a little bit more about them.
And it sounds like it's so much part of history that you can find things out, which is really wonderful.
You can, but it takes a lot of digging. They're very reticent to answer a lot of the questions that I had beyond what the tour guide told me. So I've had to do a lot of digging about it. And one of the things that I found out was as you're walking through, you see this amazing herbaceous border, which is one of the showpieces of the garden. And it's 512 feet long and 16 feet deep. It's planted in a tiered formation with the tallest plants in the back. And, you know, going up to smaller plants, everything from delphiniums and phlox and to geraniums. And they're all they're all herbaceous perennials. They're not shrubs. Mm-hmm. And I understand it takes 6 months to plant this border.
Oh my goodness. You know, borders look so easy, but they're not to make them work well. And I'm wondering, is there a peak season there or do they have things blooming all seasons?
No, they plant to have something in bloom the whole time so that the bees and the birds and the different animals that are there always have something to choose from.
Do you know when the queen moved there?
Yes, she moved there in 1936, just after her father, George VI, took the throne. And I don't know if you remember that wonderful movie, The King's Speech, that was about her father, who became George VI. And had a stuttering issue. And they moved here in 1936. And as a young girl, she and her younger sister played in the garden. And they also had their own vegetable garden that they tended themselves. And the queen mom was very interested in the roses in the rose garden. And there'll be a little bit more about her dad to talk about later on, about one of the trees that he planted as a young boy.
Well, tell us about the roses that are planted there. I watched the PBS special about the Queen's Garden, and it was just took my breath away, the beauty of the roses that were planted there.
Well, Chris, the formal rose garden has 25 beds with exactly 60 roses of the same variety in each bed. The roses that they pick to go in these beds are selected mainly for fragrance, and many of them have a royal connection. For example, some of the beds are planted with the rose called Golden Wedding, Royal William, and Special Occasion. Interestingly, no two roses of the same color can be planted next to each other. So, in other words, I know that are you familiar with the David Austin Anik Rose, the pink Anik Rose that was named after Anik Castle? So that rose is in there, but it couldn't be planted in the bed next to Queen Elizabeth because they are the similar colors. And that is the way that it was designed back by Harry Wheatcroft. And he said that no two colors will be planted next to each other. Similar colors. Do you remember the Harry Wheatcroft rose? It was introduced in 1972, and it was like a very vivid orange and yellow rose. I remember seeing it. It's not one that you see that often or see in commerce anymore, but it was named after him, and he was a great rose man in England, he and his brother. And one of their great coups was bringing the Queen Elizabeth rose, which of course was developed in America, over to England. And that became a huge hit over there, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Now, what about the Queen? Does she take an active role in the garden?
She does. It's aptly named the Queen's Garden because she oversees almost all of the landscape designs. The island where the bees are is virtually untouched, and they allow all of the plants to grow, flower, go to seed very naturally all year until they cut them finally in August. The plants reproduce and sustain themselves without help. They have actually 7 or 8 gardeners on staff, and they just let that go. And they've done some studies to find out where the bees are going to get all of their pollen, and they're basically staying right at home because of what they've done with that little island, not touching it. You can't. There's no access to it except for the gardeners. I did get a chance to take a picture of the gate that opens up to go out to the island, and that's the only access. And there are 1 or 2 gardeners who go out there, and a specialist beekeeper who goes out there. In the rose garden, because she frowns on any chemicals, they use a combination of garlic powder and water. They have these huge tanks that they spray on the roses with the garlic powder, but I couldn't get them to tell me their secret of the recipe.
Did you smell garlic when you were there?
No, but they do say that the smell lasts about a day. And in the Queen's Garden documentary, the gardener said that some of the footmen had to walk past there, mentioned it, but after about a day, it's gone, and it does kill most of the green fly and other insects. And I've tried real hard to get that recipe for us, Teresa, but they're just keeping their mouths closed.
Boy, now that would be the one to have, wouldn't it?
It would be great. And I was going to mention, too, that outside of the formal rose garden, there are roses sprinkled throughout, including Elizabeth of Glam's, which was named after the Queen Mother. There's a lovely bed with that, with some other perennials. As you walk through down the path, you can see it to the right-hand side of the path, and they were quite beautiful.
Now, Lynn, you mentioned that she discourages use of any chemicals, but I understand she did make an exception when it comes to chemicals in the garden. Can you tell us about that?
She did. Her father planted a horse chestnut tree in 1914. And I don't know if you're aware, but the horse chestnut trees in England have been attacked by a pest called the leaf miner, which is an awful thing because it goes inside the leaf and eats it from the inside out and kills the trees. So this tree they had sort of marked to be cut down, and she went out and said, could they possibly make a last-ditch attempt to save it? So they did, and they injected some chemicals into the tree, and I saw it myself when I was there. It's thriving now. And last year, it produced a whole crop of the horse chestnuts, which the kids break them open and have these big seeds inside they call conkers. And they play games with the conkers. So they saved the tree, even though she hesitated to give permission to use it. But since her dad had planted it, she really wanted to save it.
Now, Lynn, I'm curious, does Her Majesty have a favorite rose?
Well, you know, Chris, that Alan Titchmarsh, who was the host of the Queen's Garden documentary, I contacted him and asked him if Her Majesty did have a favorite rose, and he says she will not admit to having a favorite rose. That she's been asked, and she declines to name one rose that is her particular favorite, although they do say that she loves her posies that they bring in from the rose garden, but she won't pick one out in particular and say, that's my favorite. And if she does have one, it's mum's the word. But I would think it's Queen Elizabeth, you guys. What do you think?
Oh, I would think that one is a shoo-in.
Well, Lynn, it's always a pleasure to have you come on the show and talk to us about your adventures. And this, I know this was certainly delightful.
It was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed learning about the Queen's Garden, seeing it up close after seeing the wonderful documentary that we all watched, and also learning about the bees and all of the things that are being done in England to help pollinators. And I just hope that we can follow suit here.
Well, I don't know if it's all around, but boy, we have the pollinators unlike no other year this year. They are everywhere, so we're thrilled to see them.
Our thanks to Lynn Hunt for sharing this fascinating journey with us. Be sure and check out Lynn's blog, thedirtdiaries.com, to learn more about her glorious gardening adventures. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to today's broadcast of Voices from the Garden, an exclusive story series celebrating the human experience in the garden exclusively on the Rose Chat podcast. If you have a story to tell, email us at grow@rosechat.info. Voices from the Garden is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.